Mr. Kent. Well, how are you? Are you all right?
That's it.
You remember Jean Martin?
That's right. How are you? Good to see you again, sir. I think you're gonna take a picture for our, of the new president when we start meeting each other.
Aye.
Okay.
All right, I'll get this other picture, thank you, sir.
Yeah, we're getting a new sign too, so you're all right.
Excuse me.
All right, on this side. Good. Now, sit down here, sit down.
Thank you.
Well, are you working hard?
I surely am. I picked an interesting time to start.
You started to travel.
So we've had a very active few weeks since I started. Incidentally, I had a call from Earl Blake this morning, who somehow exceeded your appointment schedule and wanted to be very sure to give you his best regards.
Yeah.
Called me from Palm Springs.
Great guy. Is he in Palm Springs?
Yes, he's living out there permanently.
He is. How is he anyway?
He's fine. I'm going out there the 2nd of May, and I'm gonna spend the day with him. His wife just had another hip operation, but she's getting on fine.
Such a strong man.
He really is.
Great MacArthur man.
I think he's a little lonely out there in the desert because he doesn't get back here.
Well, he used to be in New York too, and he...
Right.
Just, you know, he likes the action and the rest. They all think they wanna retire and play golf.
No.
They get that.
Right.
Well, what are you'll probably get most of the country, won't you, in your term of office?
Yes.
A little of the world as well.
I'm sure I will, and we're quite active internationally now too. There'll be a number of things that we will be...
Well, there are several areas where we will be interested in trying to enlist your support. One,
totally supporting that.
And what we need is that if you can get your members and each of your members to span out to, don't write us, but write the members of the House and Senate. And I just say that you favor, we don't want any tax increase, we don't want any price increase, and hold the line, and then it'd be very helpful. And write it as individuals to their senators and their congressmen and the rest. This can be very important. A second area that we'll be talking to you about, which will involve many of you, is the whole area of trade policy and the rest. I know there's going to be some things there. Of course, you can be very interested in that. A third area, which will develop this year, that will affect business a great deal, will be energy. Energy, you know, is something that we've all got to have. We'll try to keep you posted in all these various things, but the most immediate thing is the spending thing, because it's a question of, it isn't partisan at all. Russell Walsh is in here. He's going to be with us on Democrat, and some Republicans are against us. But the point is that it's a question that if the Congress gets the impression that only those that are for more spending for this, more spending for that, the special interest, so-called, as I call them, that they are the only ones that are going to be holding them accountable. And if they don't realize it out there in this great big country, there are just an awful lot of people that don't want their taxes raised. A lot of people that don't want to see prices go up. A lot of people that don't want a new inflation. A lot of people that don't want to see the prosperity endangered by this kind of fiscal policy. It can have an enormous effect. The NAM is always on my job. I mean, sometimes plans fast, you sort of feel, well, this is sort of a special interest in the moment you do it, you do it for selfish reasons. But your membership is very broad, I know.
We have
those people out there, they always write in and say, not as a member of the NAM, but these guys are all responsible to their constituents. The guy who's got a little paperboard factory, or maybe just a small fire of 100, 200, 2,000 employees, and he writes his congressman, Senator, by golly, the guy's got an answer.
We have major programs starting and underway right now in all three of those areas, and they basically are very much grassroots-type programs. We've got our entire membership now computerized by congressional districts.
So great.
It's very easy for us to push the STR group by industry and on a combined industry basis, our recommendation before the trade negotiations get underway. I think this is going to give them some real factual data from industry that they just never had before. It will sort of state the various kinds of policies that each industry might like to see. We've got some major research efforts underway in several different areas that would affect this, and this is non-tariff barriers, trade adjustment assistance, monetary reform, and so forth. So that I'm sure from the response that we've had from the other industries that we're going to have a very valuable thing that we can furnish that group with as they get started.
Well, we'll be, you mentioned two or three people that we're working with. We will keep you as far as we possibly can through your five offices here.
Uses about half of the energy in this country, so we've got a huge stake in this thing from a user standpoint. We're approaching it strictly from that basis. We're trying to really start a major effort out in all the towns and cities and places that our members are.
Are you making an effort to encourage people to be more aggressive in their export policies and so forth? United States is the best market in the world. It's the surest market in the world. Everybody wants to sell to the United States. And consequently, U.S. producers, they work in this market and they aren't much interested in going abroad. It is a real problem, you know.
We have two new things we've started this month that are, I think, going to be very helpful that way. We started a new program through the World Trade Institute in New York. We had 25 of the major companies that are big foreign trade people, big exporters, working to provide a year-long seminar for small companies that want to get in the export business. We've had a huge response to this, and we'll get a lot of small and medium companies that will come into these things and really find out how to do it. There are a lot of us that want to get in the export business and don't know how. Secondly, we have a major U.S.-Soviet trade conference that's going to be here at the end of this month. And we've got, we've got very top people from the Soviet Union coming directly. We've got great representation here throughout government, and this is going to be a very practical, hard-nosed approach to trade with the Soviet Union. We're going to have special work on the legal, financial implications, operational considerations. As of this morning, we've got about 300 top people from business coming in for this. We think we'll have 500 outside of 28. This is the kind of thing I think if NAM had tried 5 years ago, you know, they'd have thrown us out of the office. But we've got a very, very aggressive and a very active program going on.
Of course, the East-West trade is fascinating. Of course, it's the Soviet intervention, China, and so forth. But the place where we've really got to, and of course, here's where we government's got to help. We got to break the Japanese down. They got to open up for their continuous with us. And we've got to, that's why we need some tough negotiating with them. And then, as I was saying to Heath when he's here, the New York is great, but now they're going to build up a bunch of non-tariff barriers and everything. And because if Europe wants to sell to us, we got to sell to them. And not just oranges, you know, agriculture products. But on the other hand, our guys have got to be more aggressive. Our people, you know. One fellow who's, of course, quite alert to this problem is Henry Kearns.
Yeah,
the export-import tax. Of course, he's a real fanatic on it.
Right. I've done a lot of work with Henry.
You know Henry.
And he's quite well.
A real killer.
My business partner had been Robert Anderson before I went into this. Yes, I've done a lot of work with Henry in the last.
For sure, sure. Well, I think it's good that you're present at this time, because this is a time when the NAM, of course, it should look inward to our problems here, and we'll do our best to keep the economy moving along and so forth. But it's a question, it's a time too, and the NAM at a time that so many people want to turn isolationists, you can turn them out. I mean, it's rather interesting in the world today, in the world, so many of the countries in Europe are turning in selfish and so forth. The U.S. is still going to be selfish, I believe, it's enlightened though. But you've got to turn out.
The breadth of our membership creates some interesting situations that way. Of course, we've got big geographical representation in certain parts of the country. We've got different industries that traditionally want to have all kinds of import restrictions. But
yes, sir.
The great bulk of our membership, we just gone through a very extensive policy determination, and it's flat out.
Well, we are glad to talk to you, and Howard, of course, if you want to, you know how to.
Yes, sir.
We'll be asking for your help, if you want to come on.
We'll be giving
help, and we'll like the closest communication.
If I may say one thing on the spending issue, the one thing we have now is presidential leadership. This opens it up.
This ain't a look for our shelves. He's just coming in to say, see, you know, we're pretty good at our shelves.
See, I mean, can't go on.
No, we didn't have it. I said, I'll say a little more. George, the trust of the NAM. Line that the bill, we have no objection. of this bill, but it doesn't go far enough. That's what I would say. It doesn't go far enough. It does not deal with the heart of the problem. We can tell you right now what we're going to recommend. And what we recommend is this. This is our recommendation. We don't need 45 days. We got it right now. That's the way I think.
Who will do that?
Will you tell them? Who will?
I will see that they have that word. Brenninger is the one who's been called.
All right.
And I'll get it coordinated with
you. You got it. Yeah, man. Just lay it right out that the administration position is flat out that we're not opposed to the bill. The only problem is it doesn't go far enough. And we're ready to stay right now what has to be done. We urge that this be included in it. That's what I do.
Okay.
How is the international, come along?
Oh, the money markets today is just an absolute chaos. And I think we are absolutely on the right track as to what we're doing. Volcker is in Japan, and we haven't heard. He's been there about 5 hours, and what his contact with Tanaka has been so far.
You mean we're on the right track because they're in chaos, or they're in chaos because we're on the right track?
No, there has been no leak of Volcker's.
What I meant is, what do you mean we're on the right track?
The move that we're planning to make of saying we think the exchange rates are not right and trying to get them rearranged and then having this kind of package that we talked about, making this move on trades and so on. I think all of the evidence that we've gotten since you decided to do that suggests that it just confirms the rightness of what you thought.
What causes all this? Is it basically a hell of a lot of speculation? Or is it really come down to it? Yes, so we have a bad balance for last year. But now, what the hell? You've got the lowest rate of inflation in an industrial nation. When you've got a tight budget, they just can't put the blame on us. It's all they can do. So it causes it.
Well, I think what causes it is people can see that there is an underlying reality that is out of balance. And everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it can't last forever. It's just something has got to give. And then sentiment somehow or other starts to build that
people
start noticing that. Sometimes they somehow don't notice it, other times they do. Once that starts, there is a tremendous amount of money that can get bet on the fact that exchange rates will change. And people go short. And the multinational corporations they're trying to protect themselves so that they don't lose a lot of money by an exchange rate change. So they speculate into that market. And so you can get gigantic amounts of money flowing in a very short period of time.
Right.
Now that, of course, is why the Swiss floated. And that's why the British, that's why floating is so good, because when you float, all that happens is the exchange rate changes a little bit, and nobody can speculate against you.
Yeah. So they speculate against us. What is the situation on the trade thing? Do you still think that we can, if we make the thing, we can still put the trade thing off in that 2-week trade? Or you see what I mean?
Well, I think we can do that all right. As long as it's in our basic package.
It's in the pack.
We can say, and this is coming.
Let me say, as far as the trade thing is concerned, we decided it's done. There's going to be no turning back. The right thing to do. So that's it. Assuming that that is the case, 2 weeks from now, soon enough, is I would prefer to do the trade thing, really, on the bit after telling the Congress, consulting with the Congress, rather than doing it while they're out of set. See my point?
I think that's
very
right.
Important to go 2 weeks later if you can.
As long as we can say in our, it's a Treasury announcement, say Monday or whatever,
right.
As long as we can say, and there is going to be a strong proposal on trade that is going to maybe hit on this point, which the President
is already consulted with the congressional leaders. Those consultations will continue, and as soon as they are completed, the message will go to the Congress.
Right, I think that's the way to do it.
We will do something to elaborate though on the trade thing. We won't argue, or would you disagree? We wouldn't impose a surcharge or anything. Prefer not.
Well,
of course,
we'll have to see. We don't know what the Japanese are going to do. Tanaka is still sounding off the same way, although we're getting a lot of intelligence. I got some more this morning on the developing sentiment within what he calls. chance in that spot. He just can't stand up against the marketplace. It's too strong for him. He's made a bad bet there. And he's ranting and raving, but he's going to get bowled over, I think. And he's a little sore at us, but he has no real cause to be. But at any rate, we've got to see what happens at Bonn and so on. And maybe they will agree to our deal, and maybe they won't. If they don't, then, you remember, our plan is to just go ahead and make a unilateral announcement that we think the exchange rates are not in line, and make a statement to the IMF along those lines, and say we're not going to do anything that will try to hold exchange rates that we think are obsolete. And that will just cause the markets to go absolutely nutty. And I think it will force their hand. It will be acrimonious. It will not be as good as having worked it out. But we're in a position of saying, look, we tried to work it out with you. And we have done this minor intervention ourselves. I took quite a beating on that yesterday. But the purpose of doing it is to be able to say to the Germans, look, this thing is out of kilter. You spent billions of dollars, and we put some money in. We put some good faith into this thing, and that just shows you that we couldn't stop it. So I think that we're in a good talking position that way.
What is the situation? What's your evaluation of the stock market settings? They never worry me, because I the market always goes down, and it should go up when it should go down. Do you think most of it is due to this international trade thing at the present time, or is it the credit crunch they fear, or are they just acting like fools? Or maybe the market just should come down sometime. What do you mean?
I despair of trying to explain what the stock market does. If I were sitting there as an analyst, looking at everything coldly, the pessimistic line of reasoning would go like this. The Federal Reserve has let the money supply grow too fast. Arthur Burns is on a hook. He wants to keep interest rates down.
Right.
Underlying everything, the only way he's going to keep interest rates down in the short run is to keep the money supply increasing fast. I mean, he can jawbone people to a certain extent, and that'll work a little bit this week or next week, but it won't stand against the tide. He's battling the tide. So if that is what is going to happen, then it doesn't make any difference about phase three or anything else. There's going to be inflation. Now, if we have inflation, what kind of an inflation is it going to be? Well, the experience through the late 1960s and early 70s is that inflation seems to be a little different right now. And it winds up with quite a squeeze on corporate profits. And to the extent that the stock market is supposed to be worrying about corporate profits, basically, and reflecting that, even though we're reading about all these increases in corporate profits, now that's fundamentally a bearish factor. That is the logic of it, as I would see it. And I do think Arthur is, this interest rate business,
We have to do it.
It's hard to get the law passed, but it really is silly to do.
Yeah, I know it's demagoguery. I know exactly what you mean. He talks about the banks.
Long is perfectly right about natural gas and how we've been very successful in holding the price of natural gas down. And what have we gotten for it? A big problem.
It's like France and every other country, but I take France as an example. France has been very, very successful in holding down rents and so forth, supposedly, in Paris. So the hell of a house. Well, that building insurance is just everybody's. So the things are sky high.
Right. And Javis is pressing us. He wants rent controls. He wants to keep rent controls in. I say, why, Jack? He says, well, because we have this big problem in New York. I said, did it ever occur to you why you've got the problem in New York? Because you've had rent control so long, you've produced the problem. He says, well, we let new units out. Well, what does that do? That just means that all they own here is where the poor people live. Nobody will spend any money on them. And so that housing deteriorates and you get more shortages and you've created your own problem. Why shift the problems of New York to the rest of the country? But it is a basic fallacy of the
economic. Well, the main thing, George, as I told you from the International Monetary Bank, I feel very strongly. And on all matters of this sort, just sail along. Don't be knocked off. Don't get all worried about it. Sure, it's a temporary problem. And who's going to remember 6 months from now about the crisis of the dollar? I'm just not that excited about it.
Our basic position that we took at the IMF is not only a good position as a negotiating matter, but it sets out a good framework for us to act within. And just as Bill Rogers was saying this morning, I thought he was very effective, that you've got to have a policy and then you've got to carry it through and you've got to make it work. Well, we've got a policy now that we didn't have before, and these moves are consistent with that policy. And basically, they'll work when we get them all implemented.
Are you getting calls from the Wall Street Tigers asking what the hell you're going to do with this, like the David Rockefeller interest?
Rockefeller calls? I haven't had many. I took one from Rockefeller Group.
Which one? That David Rockefeller?
Who
usually doesn't know.
Well, he reported the great support and the great impression you made in Poland. Romania.
It wasn't on this
then. He called about that. Then what he really wanted was to draw me out on the other.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you think? He said, I think you should make a strong statement in support of the Smithsonian exchange rate. So he's just mired in the mud. He's got no creativity,
they don't know. They don't know. I know. New York is a very brutal town. Really. They sit there in their huge boardrooms and all the rest. But they're pretty brutal. So is Washington. But we have to sit on top of the whole American heap and just plow right ahead. And eventually, maybe we'll come up with some sort of international monetary thing. I don't know whether our anxiety of summit's a good idea. Never have summits unless you know what's going to come out.
Right. I have a couple of personnel items that trouble me, Mr. President, if I could bother you with you. I don't know quite what to do about them. One has to do with the Labor Department. And basically, I have not done anything about it. That is, nobody has asked me, and I have not tried to insert myself in any way because I no doubt Pete Brennan wants to do things his way and not have any interference with me, and I respect that. I think Pete is a good man. I've got to know I like him. And I think he'll be a very good Secretary of Labor. And he's conscientious. He's interested in these things. And so on. He is, from all I can judge, and I mind you, I don't know all the things that are going on and what his problems are with the White House personnel operation. But he is nowhere. He has nobody. The place is cleaned out. And he's just sitting there by himself with whoever he has around to help him. And what he doesn't appreciate, I don't believe, is how much work there is to do. You can't get by just saying, I'm for the president. There are all kinds of substantive things. And the Labor Department,
what, assistant secretaries, undersecretaries?
Well, he just doesn't have any appointments, and all the people that were there, some were not so good, some were quite good. They've all been dismissed. And there are all sorts of problems that he's going to have help on, and positions he's going to have to take, and testimony to give. And it's mostly legitimate. There are problems, and there are pieces of legislation. So I'm concerned about
what he suggests be done about it, which could be in tune with him. That's the important thing.
Well, he has asked me to, he has suggested he'd like to come over and talk to me, so I potentially agreed on that. And I would like to kind of move in there more, if
you could do it on this basis, that you could say, sure, you leave that, you could say that. But the most important thing, I think, for him is that he must have people, at least certainly at the undersecretary level, he's got to have somebody that's totally compatible, or that is compatible with Mike Simon's view. We tried to work that out, like with Richards and Clements, they get along, you know, so forth. And so, you know, that one is very important, the assistant secretaries, that's a different matter.
Well, I
but he is. But I would say that you could, but I think if you could indicate that the whole cabinet, the president, or his delighted is being in the cabinet and so forth, and that what you feel, I would put it this way, what you feel is that he ought to get as many good managers that are loyal to him as possible in that department, so that he can be free. The Secretary of Labor's got to be the public man. And he ought to have an undersecretary and assistant secretaries who can run the thing that he can rely on, so that he isn't bogged down in the paperwork and sort of along that line, that the managerial thing is a thing, and that he can't find good managerial types. I don't know whether there's personalities in the problem, but
well,
can't divide it like the undersecretary.
He can. There are a lot of people that would like to work for him. He's a good man. He's naturally suspicious. The politics of it, I think, are potentially very dangerous, because here he is, the labor people, Meany, of course, wants him to be a good secretary of labor, we all do.
Yeah.
Meany believes that labor is well served by having a first-class group of people in the Department of Labor. He wants a good department. He thinks that it isn't just a question of getting a lot of guys who say, I'm for labor.
That's right.
It's a question of getting people who can do
they
a good job.
Them. That's right. That's right.
That's
right.
His view. Now,
right.
If the explosive thing is if he doesn't get good people and then everything goes badly,
then he has to go.
And then he throws up his hand and says, well, White House wouldn't give me the people I wanted or something. He seems to have some big dispute going with the personnel operation.
Well, the problem that he has, I think, is on either way. He wants a fellow by the name of Hill, his undersecretary, and apparently Ehrlichman doesn't feel that he's probably his fighters with apparently Ehrlichman, but John. And John doesn't feel that Hill's up to it, so Hill's an older.
Well,
I don't know Hill. So.
The reason why I mention it is I don't know all that Chuck has done with him. I know that Chuck has sort of taken him under his wing, and I don't want to get in betwixt and between there.
No.
But I do think that the
You've got a three-legged stool there. You've got Chuck, who's first trying to work what they went down on this. And you've got John, of course, who's very anxious that he have competent people that John can work with. And that's Malik, of course. The Malik's who used to be in it. The trouble that Chuck would lead to having Brennan have his loyalists, which I think is very... Brennan, is being a new man in town, has got to have people that are loyal to him. And certainly the undersecretary has got to be totally compatible. Ehrlichman and Malik, on the other hand, lean, if I may say so, too much to the idea that all he needs is a bunch of managers to make it there's where they stand. And that'll worry him. So what if you can sort of bring your feet around to the fact saying, look, they'll be loyal if you get the right kinds of people. I mean, there are some people, and you'd be glad to sort of go over the list or something. You know, I'd like to get an Arnie Weber back or somewhere. That's the kind of guy that I think ought to be over there. Weber says, that's the quality of men. Whoever would work with the Brennan, just like that. Not that you want to confess, but you work with them. Yes. That's the kind of thing. He needs bright people, but he doesn't, but he cannot take basically what you call a mallet type of ball.
I have really gotten quite an education myself in these past 4 years on what it takes to master the federal government. You need politically sensitive people.
Yeah.
The business manager type, I don't have all that much
luck
for him in this environment at all.
Oh, boy.
So
it takes
a good caliber person, and it takes somebody who understands politics after all. What politics is good at. That's the way something gets accomplished.
Did he ask to say to talk to you about this?
Well, yes, he said now a couple of times he wants to come and see me, and I've encouraged that. We're trying to set up a time.
Why don't you do it right soon?
Well, that's
before you go down to and of course before you go down to see Meany, maybe you could say, look, Meany wants to talk about international stuff, and you can build about it. You're
tell you what, I take an order and do the best I can with it. I think it's going to be very hard for that to work out because he is not respected by the people that the Treasury deals with. I'm sort of a newcomer to him and to all of these.
Have you talked to him?
I talked to him when he was on the IRS and we came up to
him. You were on it.